safety improvements on those controllers.
Hey, I'm sorry. Would you put this in the middle?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
It's basically like moving around.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I think it's like, is this the pop that's supposed to be paying these other things? So my like, maybe it doesn't have to come out with a bunch of work on now.
Yeah.
Look,
you can.
Well, I trimmed down what you gave me.
I know.
Thinking, and then as I'm sitting there with Alan watching how quickly that clock goes down, I'm reading it through again because if I read it through without any eye movement up or down, I barely made the 3-minute mark. So I'm going through saying, I can probably get rid of this paragraph. And as much as I did that, I'm watching the clock as I'm talking and I'm going, like, I think I could skip this next one. I think I got it all. Yeah, it was, thank you very much. And the clock
chimed. Were there a lot of people there?
It was a cool,
a lot of people.
I've done that. Pitch before. Yeah, same thing.
You got 67.
You know, you go, you start, say, okay, I'm over 3, so mm-hmm.
I got to cut some.
I knew I had to cut a couple times. Even as I read it through, standing up there, I'll never be finished.
And what I was saying is that
the roof removed and all of them set up the pond, pretty much covered it. But he submitted comments on my
story. No,
there was a big crowd there.
When we set up an
we got on, I'm trying to say, non-political.
I thought we were doing that
much. 30 minutes in.
Actually, no.
I represented some various cities at county level.
We're doing all that.
It was at DOT center by in Fairfax.
You're right.
The one out there.
You're right.
It's out at Fairfax, not too far off of.
I still like that look, though.
It was Lee Highway.
Have you gotten that look around?
Is it 50 out there? If you go up Little River Terminal,
I have gotten
it. You're
out there, but is it a friendly
preface to Cowboy?
He's got a facility in the
coast.
Hey, how's it going? Good.
Good.
I don't know. I'm kind of a
sign like
fan.
Oh, really?
This morning I loved it. But I was thinking to myself when I got home, I'm going to start doing all of my dog's morning walks, and my husband's going to be
eating. That's a nice way to do it.
I do it after
dark.
Yeah.
Well, that was
my business. We got a big backyard.
Raleigh, as long as you can walk him to a place where he can then have a beer, he's currently at Blackwell Hitch with George. So it works out.
I saw you earlier this week. I can't remember which day it was at the water park. For Crystal City, for the bike tour.
Oh, yeah!
But I turned and you must have hopped on your bike faster. You might have been at the end of your visit or something.
I had to catch a bus.
Turned to do something. Oh, wait!
I know the bid guy who I guess was organizing that, Robert Mandel.
He was there at that moment. Hey, what is this? I didn't know this was happening, and so he asked Lane to see.
He's garnering support.
Yeah, I try to promote it at my office for the bikers. The bike coordinator there. And some of them still haven't caught on. They're like, what are you talking about? We were talking about today.
I send you an email every year.
Right. Yeah, it was really.
That's all working.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I wish I had more time, but I haven't so far.
We've had a lot of good stuff.
My bus stop. I bike to the bus stop that's right there.
Do you have a bike share there? Or do you
have my own bike? And I either walk it or I get on the bus.
Ideas, opportunities.
Yeah, because that's an example people where
I've gotten over the I'm scared it's gonna fall off.
Yeah, it works pretty well.
Yeah, every once in a while I'm like reading a book on the bus.
Yeah.
And I have this moment of where's my bike?
Yeah.
And then I remember I'm like, okay, it's on the bus or on days when I'm locked in. So I'm like, where's my bike?
A bit more nebulous as to what they could say.
If you ever got off and just forgot it.
I've never done that. I think the bus driver would tell me.
On a per person basis.
They're getting used to me.
That's what I know. Do you have the bike on the other side then too?
Yeah, when I was started.
Oh, like when you get to because
junior high.
No, I
remember
I
they the messed up the aisle.
That's great. That's what I would get. Like, so I was thinking, if you know you need it, then
right.
Like, it's easier,
right.
But then it's like, oh,
exactly.
Here.
And sometimes you use it when you're done. Exactly. So, yeah, every once in a while, I'm like reading a book or something, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, my paying attention.
That worked out pretty good.
It's worth his parents to drive around the city all day.
The driver's like, probably Melissa.
Well, just when I took a couple of bike shares down here, too.
Okay, we'll get started. It's 7 o'clock in the Transportation Commission monthly meeting for May 17, 2017 is in session. First thing we'll review is the minutes. I sent some corrections to the minutes.
Yes.
Couldn't find anything in the rest of them.
Yeah.
I kept looking. Anybody else have any input to the minutes for last month?
I sent my corrections in advance.
Okay, so you got two inputs.
And they're incorporated in this.
Oh, they're all in there?
Oh.
Okay, I didn't check that.
Yeah.
Okay, no more corrections. I asked for a motion to accept the minutes.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
What accepted? Am I voting on?
Minutes.
Minutes.
Aye. It was good to be unanimous.
Okay, updates to receive. Vision Zero, anything new since last week or so?
Well, there's five unannounced pop-up events that are going on. Those have been scheduled, and we are intentionally not announcing when and where they are so that they can be much more organic public input. So they're going to be at shopping centers, grocery stores, Old Town, obviously. There's one at a metro station at some point. So we're going for a variety of different types of locations and locations within geographic locations as well.
Have any of those been done yet, or are they still scheduled?
Yet.
Okay.
Just good. Start this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Good.
Even earlier, possibly.
Okay, before I proceed, we're going to have the public hearing for the Old Town North Small Area Plan, so if anybody wants to speak on that, please fill out the forms that are over there on the corner and give them to staff, and then they'll call you when it's your turn to speak. So the limit will be 3 minutes. Okay, next item, 72-hour rule exceptions. What's
sorry, I just have a quick question about the Vision Zero item.
Okay.
In the write-up it says members of the work group will provide a list of existing plans, programs, and data for review by the project management team, which will inform strategies in the action plan. Is the material that are being considered to inform the plan going to be made available, like, on the website page for the project or in any public-facing way?
yes, as far as I know, we have crash data, and then we also, as part of our public input process, we have a wiki map that shows where residents, members of the public are finding problem spots as well. So, yeah, all that is going to be public.
Okay, so I know the map,
mm-hmm.
It sort of describes that on there, but the specific data sets that are being reviewed and compiled for this purpose, are they going to be published up there so it's like stuff people can click on?
I think so, but let me check.
Okay, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Anything else with Vision Zero?
That's it.
72-hour rule exceptions. the parking?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I can give a brief update on that. Staff went to the Traffic and Parking Board and received approval for our what we were proposing, which is essentially to keep the rule as is, but to have an exception for those that may be traveling. And that will be in four different instances throughout the year that they would be able to get this exception for 7 days. And this was after a long public outreach process that we went through to get responses to this proposed change. So we went before the Traffic and Parking Board. We had unanimous approval on that recommendation. Then we went to the City Council last Saturday, and we had a good discussion. That was after a briefing to them on the 25th of April. We went to them on the public hearing. We had a couple of speakers speaking about this item, and then the City Council did adopt staff's changes with minor amendments, just extending the pilot period, so it was 2 years instead of one, to evaluate how this exemption goes, and then also to strike the ability for people to have sort of contiguous exemptions. So essentially we had made it so that you could have one exemption next to another, which would make it 28 days. So we have removed that part of it, so now it's only 14 days. So I guess the message from this, it's important to know that, you know, this was something that council had asked us to do as part of our parking work plan, and we're making really good progress on that parking work plan. This is the third item that we brought to them this year. The first was the motor coach, and Commissioner Place helped greatly with that effort, and that's been completed. We have this, and then we have the residential parking permit policy. So all of these things that we had sort of in this work plan are moving forward, which is good, and that allows us to sort of chip away at this bigger parking problem. I don't want to say problem, but challenge.
Parking challenge.
Yes, exactly.
Better word. Okay, any questions on that? Any questions on any of the other items? On the updates?
Chair, if it was okay, Alan would like to update you on item four here, the six-year improvement plan for the Commonwealth Transportation Board. We just have some recent news.
Certainly.
All right. Good evening, everybody. I just want to give you a quick update on the six-year SIP. Vice Chair Kleiss and I went to the public hearing a couple weeks ago now and presented testimony on behalf of the city. So appreciate Mr. Kleiss' willingness to do that for us. It was well received. Since then, they have published the actual SIP. So we were able to start looking through it to actually seeing what the numbers would look like. Up until that point, we knew that four of our five projects had been approved before. We didn't know what any of the numbers look like and the when. That's the most important part, is when the money becomes available. So as part of there are a couple different programs of funding that became available that have been put up for draft approval. This is still a draft plan. It goes to the CTB, the Commonwealth Transportation Board, on June 21st, which is, of course, the same time as the Transportation Commission next month, so we might have a very last-minute update on that as well next month. But basically, our CMAQ and RSTP program that we put forward has been approved as we requested. CMAQ funding is about $2.3 million, and RSTP is about $1.5 million. That supports a variety of different projects we have going forward, the TDM program, different studies out there, ITS integration, ongoing improvements to bus shelters around the city, cabbie bike share, and some improvements we're planning to make the Van Dorn Metro Rail station. Also, we got some news on the smart scale front. There's two different angles from that. That's the competitive program that we put forward five projects. Of the four that went forward, all of them have moved forward with funding. That's the DASH bus service and facility expansion, West End Transway Southern Towers facilities, the traffic adaptive signal control fiber optic project, and the Backlick Run Trail Phase 1. So all those have been advanced and recommended for funding. When the funding becomes available varies from year to year, but we had actually requested money in FY 22 and 23, and in a couple of the cases, the money's actually coming a little bit earlier. For example, the DASH facility, the request they made to expand their facility, the first year funding becomes available is in FY 19. So approximately $400,000 that first year, more likely design type of work. On the West End Transway, we had applied for in 22 and 23, and the money starts flowing actually in FY21. So we'll have a report next month that has all the details of what exactly the years are. What this helps us do is, with the West End Transway, for example, is starting to put together that whole package of funding, how we're going to build the entire project. There are a couple other projects that have some continuous funding from HB2, which is what it used to be known as before they changed the name to Smart Scale. And another project that is directly impacting the city is actually for VRE. The state is recommending allocating $16.5 million to complete the funding package for the tunnel and to connect the pedestrian improvements between Alexandria Union Station, creating a tunnel that connects over to the King Street Metrorail station.
Cool.
So as part of VRE put together a package of improvements along the whole Fredericksburg line. This is one of them, but it is recommended for funding, and we believe it's probably going to be enough to complete the project funding-wise. So they've got to finish design and then moving forward with implementation within a couple of years. So those are some big, big ticket items that are out there that are recommended for funding. I think the city did pretty well with what we put out there. I think we put a lot of thought into what we decided to apply for and when. And so far, the recommendations are looking good.
The King Street Tunnel, will that be coordinated, or will the timing of the fund, will that be coordinated with the larger scale King Street real implementation project?
I asked that exact same question as soon as I saw this. The way it looks, the schedule of that, it looks like the actual construction of that will happen either very late in the King Street project or after, because that's always been a concern, that there's going to be a lot of disruption, a lot of projects going on within one small area. But the way it looks now is there will be either separation or very minor overlap.
Perhaps in the tail end of it, but the plan for it and the ease of access for the customer going from the VRE station through King Street, that'll be considered with the design then?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good.
And I think that just one thing, if I might, Mr. Chair, one really positive thing about this news is that for the West End Transitway, we didn't have any construction funding for that project. So this $10 million in construction funding, which is when we did the first phase of the transitway on Route 1, that was an $11 million project, I believe. So this is a significant amount of funding for us and gives us the opportunity when we ask for more money to have more leverage, because
absolutely,
if we have pieces of it funded, it's easier for us to get additional funding.
Do we already have funding for design?
Yes, we actually we have.
That was a different.
Yeah,
we already have that
for
scheduled.
Design,
okay.
And that's underway. That's
correct.
Just recently awarded the contract for that.
Great.
Okay.
Great. So I have a slightly related question, maybe then under B, the grant funding for Holmes Run Connector Trail. I just want to make sure I want to see how what this means exactly. The Holmes Run Connector Trail was recommended for $429,619 in funding. A total of $800,000 was requested by the city and endorsed by us. So does this mean we only got like a half of what we wanted for that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So part of what we need to look at with that is just ways that we can value engineer. So I mean, the type of what was really driving up the cost in that project is we're looking at sort of a pervious trail surface that's really driving up the cost, and we might be able to see if there's other mitigations that we can do for environmental factors that could bring down the cost a little bit, or we might do a section of it versus doing the entire. So
okay,
there are different things that we're looking at for that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions on the updates? Okay, we'll proceed to the commission updates. I'll just go around the table here. If anybody has any
updates? I'll do a quick update. So yesterday evening, conveniently again, we had our commercial parking standards task force meeting, approximately monthly, and I think generally it's going to line up this way, where it's going to happen shortly before this meeting, so that makes it easier for me to, I guess, remember what we talked about. Sorry. We were hoping to cover two topics last night. We only covered one of the two. We talked in depth about office parking, and we were really digging into data that staff provided, detailed data collection around Alexandria about existing office parking
use rates, so like the real ratios of use rather than just the ratios of what has been provided in the past for some existing assets, and other factors associated with those office developments in an attempt to look for relationships. There was a lot of discussion about the size of the data set. This is a particular interest to me because it's a data set under 20 buildings, and so there's certain correlations with things like walk score, metro access, and stuff that I don't think can necessarily be fully attributed in an analysis of a sample of that size. However, staff did a great job of laying out what we're seeing in this sample in Alexandria today and suggesting a range of options for us to discuss on what parking ratios for office might look like if you were looking at something that was close to status quo, what we've seen built today in the past under the ordinance, and then more aggressively up to something that you might see in DC, for instance. And so we had a lot of discussion about the options that were laid out vis-a-vis the data that was available, requested from staff for some additional data to be made available for consideration that might be from other parts of the region. So we know that Arlington has a data set that we're hoping to take a look at in conjunction with this one that we have, this Alexandria office buildings. We talked a lot about things like what walk score means for an office building versus the mixed use nature of a site. So you might have office with other uses, and do both of those have the same kind of weight when you're looking at how much parking is needed? We talked about the difference between metro access and types of bus access that we see in Alexandria, because a lot of office in Alexandria might not be near metro, but it might be metro rail, but it might be near many bus lines. And we came up with a rough adjusted option that we wanted staff to look at with some credits up and down for different kinds of situations that a developer might take advantage of. So credits for shared parking and what shared parking might look like when asking for reduction in provided parking on site, shared parking on site versus off site, proximity to other garages, things like that. So we spent pretty much the whole meeting talking about that topic, and we had to postpone hotel parking ratios to a later meeting, which is its own large both data set and discussion about the peculiarities of parking for hotels. I spoke to Chris about this last night after the meeting. One of the things that I'm essentially charged with in this project is both bringing you updates about what is discussed in this task force context, but also bringing back your thoughts, concerns, recommendations, and an input based on this process. And so we aren't too far along, but I do want to get a sense of what you all might think are the right balance of roles, of me giving you an update on what we talk about and what that task force is pushing ahead with staff, and what you might want to weigh in on, or what kind of engagement that I might be able to shape and have with you in future meetings. So not necessarily tonight, but on a future evening, how I might work with staff to shape a discussion that really brings your input in. And if there are particular things, again, this is commercial uses, we're covering several. It's actually really a lot of ground to cover in a relatively efficient and short process. But this is a knowledgeable group with a lot of different interest angles that you might look at this challenge. So I just want to make sure that I'm engaging this group in the right way, in the most productive way.
I think our group should be influenced by the knowledge collected by your group, so that I would prefer to sort of wait and hear something of the results shaped into something to look at, mm-hmm. to evaluate it. Mm-hmm. But before it's final, you know, while we have an opportunity to put some input on the project. Mm-hmm. One question I have, in terms of your evaluating the current experience that office buildings are experiencing.
Yeah.
do you adjust the numbers on account of vacancy rates in the buildings?
So essentially the staff's current sample was designed to be pretty full offices. So they didn't include in the sample offices that were any more than about 75%, or any less than 75% full. And so that was to control for the influence of potential high vacancy rates. So in that respect, there's no adjustment done, but the sample itself is kept to be offices that are pretty full. And there were in the samples some outlier buildings that behaved differently than the other similar ones. One example outlier was Harbor Center, which is not far from here, Union Street 200 block, and for all intents and purposes, not close to Metro, and yet it has really low parking use rates, essentially parking occupancy rates. And it seems to be the nature of the kinds of services provided by the employers in that building and the coordination with potentially other things going on. On the other end of the spectrum, there was a different site, the Rheingold, I believe, building that was really high utilization, 100%. It's a small parking garage, parking facility of only 24 spaces, 100% utilized. But the occupants of that building, it's more of a, there are more humans per square foot being packed in there, and they have a different kind of work lifestyle than your average office. So there were some outliers, which we discussed in detail about whether or not they should be included, and we adjusted some of the averages based on those if you took them out. We also spent some time talking about the difference between, or the fact that a building that has good metro access, metro rail probably also has good bus access, and we didn't want to double count credits. So if we're looking ahead at ways to give a building credit for and parking reductions for certain kinds of assets, we didn't want to double count things that were interrelated with one another.
So I have two questions. Parking ratios, like minimums and maximums, are they forever when a building is done, or do they sunset at some point, or possibly contingent on, you know, the future build out of, like say, the West End Transitway, that, you know, within a half mile buffer, once this project is done, you know, that parking could be repurposed, or new construction would have this reduced minimum or whatever?
So I think that's a great question. Generally speaking, because parking is a physical thing that gets built when a building's developed, it's pretty static, and so when it's built, it's built. And in a lot of cases, it's hard to convert to other uses. But that said, flexibility came up last night in this discussion because of a lot of uncertainty we have about the future of the occupants of office space and the demands of that market, the future of bus routes and bus service levels in different parts of the community, because that's less fixed, perhaps, than a metro station location.
And Metroway is somewhere in between, or West End Transitway.
Correct. And so those are the idea of flexibility in the context of a parking ratio requirement for a building is a challenge that we have to sort of look at, because I think that there are opportunities for allowing for standards to allow flexibility in the future. If a building has a lower minimum and it doesn't build to that, it would, in theory, in just by code, be able to, in the future, reduce its parking if it didn't go below that lower minimum, if it built something above that. And there are other factors that could be built in to allow for that flexibility. I think today, mostly what we look at is, these are special use permits for parking reductions, and that I think there's an interest in avoiding special exception processes if we can, for the development community and for certainty for the rest of the community in understanding what expectations are.
So I read that there's a big project in LA where they're anticipating lower parking demand in the future. On a new project, they're developing the parking deck for that flexibility so that it can be repurposed as office. And the ways that they listed were, you know, extra high heights, so it could be office space, flat floors instead of like ramps.
Yep.
And then putting all the engineering structure in the middle, like the elevators and stuff like that, so that it just can very seamlessly become a sort of industrial-style office space. you know, so my other question would be, is there any sort of incentive, like a LED or a lead score incentive or something like that for disaggregating employee parking cost from, you know, their salary, so that an employee has to pay for parking, so that it's not essentially free as part of their benefit? Because I know, you know, it's correlated with people driving to work if they get it free, but, you know, they could just as soon get that money as salary instead if you're a transit rider or something like that.
Right. So. To my knowledge today, that issue is addressed through the TMP programs for various developments. Correct me if I'm wrong, that Alexandria has ever tried to regulate employer transit benefits.
Or incentivize it.
Through the planning process, through the DSUP.
Right.
No, we haven't had success with that, particularly, like, an example would be with when new multifamily comes in and we try to essentially require the developer to offer a particular parking package, like separate the parking from the... We can make that recommendation, but in terms of requirement, it's a challenge because often the applicant is selling off that property to somebody else, and then that person's going to manage it. But I think Melissa's answer was right on in that it's through the TMP process that we would do something like this with the employers, and I think it might not be a regulation per se that we can necessarily do through law, but what we can do is sort of sit down with them and say, look, your TMP requires by law that you contribute X amount. This is the way we want you to, or this is the way we would like you to do that and negotiate that.
The challenge, which she alluded to, is that the development process, the incentives that we could apply to a development don't necessarily apply to the employers in that development because they could be different employers in the future. So those relationships are really important, and the extent to which Alexandria can invest in TMP support for buildings and their and through the buildings, the employers within them, we have a chance to convince more employers to take advantage of pre-tax benefit programs and other, frankly, just sensible financial choices that give their employees more options. But it is particularly hard to make those connections through the development approval process.
There's all kinds of little soft things you can do, like having carpool parking spaces and vanpool parking spaces and other prioritized stuff like that.
And we talked about bike share, and we talked about some other things that might be able to be credit things that a development could do to earn credit toward.
And like if you go to Tyson Square Mall, you can look down the aisle and see each stall that's open or not, and then you get a counter as you enter. As to how many spaces are available in each direction, so they really get close to full optimized, so then they can build less, you know, and get full utilization, and that would help a developer out if they're paying, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 a spot. So.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea, parking management technology.
Now you're just looking at commercial.
Correct. The scope of this process is commercial uses, and it's not all commercial uses, but it is many commercial uses.
Do you look at buildings that are a combination of commercial and residential?
This would be just this would apply to it to the extent that it would look at the commercial use in that building.
Okay.
The residential parking ratios were updated fairly recently, and there's a new standard for that. So that new standard would be applied for the residential portion of the site. And whatever recommendations came out of this process would apply to the office or the hotel or the other applicable commercial use portion.
Yeah, because I think when you have both in the building, then you know during the day you got the people parking there that are working there, and then people that are living there.
Yep.
You know, so that could allude to some shared parking.
Yeah, and that's the shared parking question is of a lot of interest to the group to figure out. There's both on-site shared, like that, where there's compatible interactive uses. One of the ideas that was mentioned was that if a building wanted to build more than a target rate of parking, so to go above, that above amount would be publicly accessible commercial parking. So it would be shared in the sense that it would always be able to be used by the public, like a commercial garage would and not be cordoned off in such a way that it couldn't be accessible, and that would be one kind of mitigation for going above a target rate.
The same thing with a building that has retail and commercial, and you know, then you probably got some of the retail, commercial, residential. You know, the bigger the buildings, you know, they have a combination of that, and I don't know how they handle that, but I'm sure there's some thought behind of, you know, when the peak periods are and when people there need to park. So it gets complicated.
Yeah.
Complicated enough if you're just dealing with a building just pure commercial. So
yeah,
I was glad to hear thinking about biking and such. But do they consider the biking for commercial buildings or office buildings, and however that would be, that there might be a lot of people that would be bringing their own bikes, and considering how you would have to design the parking garage in order to have like biking cages and areas like that, mm-hmm. facilities that way, that I know that's a little hard to change sometimes once it's built.
Yes, I can speak to that. But I don't know I know how it works in Arlington, but we didn't talk about bike parking, and I don't know how the requirements work here.
So we have bike parking guidelines that were updated maybe a year or two ago, not too long ago. And when we did that, we looked at Arlington, and our guidelines are actually, I would say, identical, very similar. We haven't received a lot of, so it's a little bit different in terms of through the development review process, we make those requirements, and typically the applicants are very accommodating of that. We haven't had issues where they say, okay, we can't put a room in because we don't want to absorb that cost. Typically that's something that through the development review process, applicants are very willing. So
I guess
what I'm trying to say is that we haven't had to make it a law, or haven't had to have it as an ordinance, which has some benefits because we can continually increase it as situations change, and we can tweak it to make sure that it's kind of keeping up with the market.
Does it include shower and locker facilities?
It does.
Okay, that's cool. Great.
That it?
Yeah.
Thank you for the update. Carolyn, do you have any?
No.
Okay.
So I got two things. So we had meeting 13 for the North Potomac Yard Small Area Plan update. And so that's now being finalized, and you know, letter of recommendations and all that being drafted. Or is that now completed at this point? Or?
That has, you mean in terms of the final Transportation Commission letter? Yes, it has been transmitted to the City Council.
Yeah, and a good summary is in here in the notes. The other thing I wanted to talk about was on May 3rd, Fairfax County hosted a autonomous vehicle symposium at the Government Center that I attended, and it was really great. You know, this lasted all day, and they had like practical demonstrations of a few vehicles, including one from a company called E-Trans that's based in Fairfax County in the Mosaic District, and they focus on vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure type software and hardware applications that use short-range radio frequency to communicate with signs, lights, and other vehicles to transmit, you know, what's happening ahead of you, and you know, tell you to brake or slow down for the yellow light before it even changes to a yellow light to save gas, and you know, all kinds of different safety features of anticipating, you know, accident conditions and all that. You know, one thing, there was an article in the Post, you know, where the governor was talking about how Virginia is very deliberately not regulating autonomous vehicles like California and other states are doing, because they want to invite innovative companies to come here and test their vehicles. And we actually have what they call like a smart roadway that is a designated corridor for autonomous vehicle testing along the Beltway, I-95, 66, 29, and 50. So, you know, what I'm concerned about, you know, you read about, like, the future of, like, L5 fully autonomous vehicles and sleeping on the way to work and all that. But what I'm interested in is the 10 intermediary steps between now and then, you know. So I, like, asked a question during the symposium, and I can send you the link because it's, you know, it's all online. They filmed it really, really well. You know, how do we get from here to there? And, like, the phase one of phase one is, you know, a low-speed, shared-use vehicle that goes on a fixed route where you still have a driver who's there to, like, hit a panic button But when they're not doing that, and that's probably most of the time, they're there as concierge and information guide and customer service and to help people, you know, in wheelchairs, collect fare, you know, if you're doing that. And so I see a role for business improvement districts as like leading that effort. So, you know, two areas that the E-Trans CEO who's on the panel was mentioning was Reston and Tyson's, you know, would be really good candidates. And I'm like, you know, I got two bus routes that at least in the midday would be perfect for that type of vehicle that already exists. From a company called Easy Mile in France, and in two places in revenue service, and they've tested them on public roads in Vegas and stuff like that. So, I mean, this is really happening very quickly. And, you know, other things that they touched on that are very near term, you know, even without autonomous vehicles, you can look at the impacts that shared use in rideshare is having as sort of the prototype for what's coming. You just sort of up the mode share. And they were saying if you go to, you know, 14th and U on a Saturday night, every millennial is waving their hand trying to flag down their Uber vehicle, you know, so, you know, that's the future. So, like, curbside management and, you know, potentially removing, you know, paid parking spaces and designating this as a rideshare zone or something like that, basically like a dynamic taxi stands in those very high-frequency areas, you know, and then everything you said about parking ratios and all that. So, you know, I think a really good experimental thing that's going to be happening is the hot lanes on 66 is going to change the dynamics of that whole corridor, where it's going to go to HOV3, and then you have much more, you know, monetary incentive like you do on the 95 corridor to do things like slugging and all that. And Uber is going to launch a Uber commute service that sort of is seeking to monetize and throw technology into the slugging sphere. So I think eventually you're going to see, you know, rideshare and all that, where you have you know, higher and higher occupancy and larger vehicles, you know, up to like I think the sweet spot will be the 12 passenger, you know, Sprinter van, and there's a company called Via Ride that does it in New York and Chicago and California to success, you know, with like a flat $5 fare, which is like a lot better than paying $20 on the hot lane. So. I could talk all night about this, but that's pretty much
That was interesting. I didn't hear about that going on. So Virginia's not passing any laws to do that, so all these other pilot programs probably they give them a waiver or something to go ahead and operate.
Yeah, like in Pittsburgh where Uber where they has, got, you know, autonomous vehicles driving around, you have a driver in there, like I was saying,
the kill
you know,
switch,
hit the panic button, so... You know, that precedent is already set for going to a public transit type vehicle that would have like, you know, 12 passengers in it or something like that. So,
yeah. I think that my personal opinion is that public transit's a really important opportunity for operationalizing autonomous vehicle technology in a way that's actually still beneficial to communities. And I think an interesting challenge related to that is the retraining/orientation of drivers to customer service in a way that they're not doing today. I mean, you can, there are great drivers out there who are very friendly and take care of their passengers, but it's a secondary step in their ultimate.
Isn't that their primary job?
Yeah, and their responsibility, right. Which is to be a safe driver.
So it's that shift to the customer focus.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's in a lot of ways technological change is hard on some populations because we don't, as a whole community, take care of these transitions very well. So when, you know, the Industrial Revolution and the internet and all, you know, as the places where jobs change and what jobs are important and what jobs aren't as important change with technological change, I think this is the kind of thing where thoughtful effort ahead of time can really prepare our workforces, and this is maybe a city workforce, but it's also the other things, the people and the workers in the industries that are related to transportation. It's not as simple as just like the governor saying, let anything goes, it'll be great, it'll all work itself out, because there are going to be a lot of people who will for whom it won't just work itself out as the system changes.
Well, I see, you know, if it's managed correctly, you know, I'm looking at this paraphrase of, you know, one of the founders of Zipcar, who said that, you know, the good scenario would be what she calls FAVES, the FAVES principle, fleets of autonomous vehicles that are electric and shared. And then the bad scenario would be driverless vehicles loosed upon streets and highways, randomly ferrying individual occupants near and far, and your average occupant per vehicle actually could potentially drop below one because you send it to get the dry cleaning.
Yep.
You know?
Zero.
But you know, there are such economic incentives, and as long as you remove all the pain points to making it a shared vehicle, you know, everybody's going to want to just sit on the shared vehicle looking at their smartphone, I think, in a couple of years, and won't really care what the vehicle necessarily looks like. They're just buying mobility as a service. And, you know, and the, you know, the labor issue is, you know, not happening in a vacuum. So that's kind of part of a broader societal conversation. But I see, you know, if it's done right, everyone who's out there driving their own personal vehicle right now, that's uncompensated labor, you know. And I want to take, you know, more people and put them in fewer vehicles and have a professional driver there, you know, who's like a airline pilot monitoring systems and maybe not actually steering, but, you know, is there to answer questions and help ADA passengers and there to facilitate the whole process and maybe sell coffee or other value-added things. But but that's a new job that didn't exist before because that's currently mobility that people are doing themselves and actually paying for it instead of getting paid, so... Yeah, I just think everything's going to change. It's a very inspiring day. So.
Yeah, but that was good. Yeah, and like you say, it's the 10 steps before we actually get there. That's
right. You know, I think that's where the really interesting stuff is. You know, cause everything else is sort of speculative. But I'm like, well, what is happening somewhere in the world today that we can absorb and say, does this work?
You know? Yeah, it's going to happen. It just, you know, it'll take time. Everybody gets used to that.
And Fairfax Connector has, as part of its 5-year transit development plan, flexible routes, and we're going to hire consultants to study potentially autonomous vehicles for those flexible routes. So.
Yeah, okay. Christine,
anything? I have an update. I serve on the Eisenhower West Landmark Van Dorn Implementation Advisory Group. Our long-awaited third meeting is scheduled for this Monday at the My Father's House Christian Church at 4746 Eisenhower Avenue. That's right by the FedEx facility. I've been told that if you decide to drive there, people will be there to guide you to the place to park. So just look out for the people in, I think it's orange. We are going to discuss the long-awaited air quality analysis, which has been delayed repeatedly. That's why we haven't had the meeting in several months, as well as some phase two infrastructure plan and capital improvement projects. So those will be the topics of the discussion. Everybody's welcome. I hope this is some
of nothing here. Nothing there. I don't have anything.
Just two items to update the commission on from last week's dashboard meeting. The new general manager, Josh Baker, has come up with two new ideas that he's looking to move forward. This first one is in the implementation stage at this point. For buses that are targeted for surplus disposal, traditionally they had just been disposed of for scrap metal. He now is exploring an opportunity that he had used in a previous position where it's put out to a market where the buses are advertised and purchased as is to be used either as for refurbishment purposes or for the purposes of parts, which is generally where the market is for something like that. So the cost recovery tends to be much higher than if it's just sold for scrap, so he's exploring that opportunity. And the other one is, and he's, again, this is at the very early stages of discussion, free rides for students at the middle school and high school level, as well as those eligible for DOT free ride programs. He reached out to Fairfax, and they have a very well-run program for school children utilizing the Fairfax bus system, and he's looking to do that here. Long-term benefits could very well be a reduction in the fleet size that the city of Alexandria needs to maintain to provide services for the school system. So long-term, it could have some benefits. And as of the current time frame, if implemented, it should not impact any of the capacity issues that we have. So he's exploring those too.
What was the age range?
Fairfax is using middle and high school.
Mm-hmm.
Fairfax reports no problems with their system with those two age groups, but he's, again, looking to explore that further.
It's now 5% of riders are utilizing the student bus pass.
I'm sorry?
5% utilizing the student bus pass, and it keeps growing. And, you know, what the theory is, you know, if you get people in that age range, that then they don't have to decide to get a car, you know, and then they become a transit customer long term.
That was exactly what we were talking about, is you can condition at a very early age a group into recognizing the benefit of public transit. You could have a rider for life. And with the shift towards not owning cars, this just helps foster that thought.
They also send a bus to schools, you know, as like a show and tell day, and you know, if they're having kickoff events for, you know, when all the kids come to school to sign up for their classes and all that, they'll generally send a bus sometimes. So.
They speak very highly of it in Fairfax.
Sorry, just a quick question. Was the 5% of riders using the student bus pass, is that here or is that in Fairfax?
Fairfax.
That's Fairfax.
Yeah, we haven't actually launched this yet.
Okay. It's very early.
So Fairfax, when you say bus pass, that's the free, they get a free ride.
It's been going on for 2 years.
Okay. Okay. And I don't know, Arlington has a discounted rate, which they recently expanded to like the middle school age, because it's like free up to some young age, like 5, and then there was this gap where they had to pay full price, and then there was the student pass. But I don't know what, I'd be interested to find out what their take up rate is.
The other thing is they, you know, evangelize to their parents and stuff like that, so they get other people involved in it.
Yep.
Also, Fairfax just launched its bus tracker program last week, so you can now track live all the Fairfax buses. And,
right.
And then we got picked up by the third-party app developers very quickly, so we're at least on Transit app now. So.
Good.
Right. The bus pass in Fairfax, is that for the connectors, or is that for all the transit services?
Just connectors. Oh, and Q bus.
Q bus. That's right, yeah, the one from
City of Fairfax, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I guess we'll move on to agenda item 4, Old Town North Small Area Plan. Like I mentioned before, if you want to speak, please fill out a form and hand it to staff. And the commission will get a briefing and discuss this, and then we'll open it up for a public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I'll just introduce the project, also the project managers that are here. Steve Sun-Yong is going to give you a presentation on this project. I also have Jeff Farner from Planning and Zoning. Jeff, you've got a name tag here in case you didn't know, so you've welcome. He's trying to keep a low profile over there. But I will turn it over to them in a minute. I just wanted to provide a little bit of context to the commission. This has come before you were giving you an update on this plan, I want to say, about 6 months ago. So not new information, and then also we have a former transportation commissioner who is the chair of the advisory group. Her name is Maria Wasowski. I don't think she's here tonight, but she has been serving as the chair for the advisory group of this update of the small area plan.
Right.
And so what we're before you tonight is we are looking for the commission's endorsement of the plan as it to be consistent with the transportation master plan at the city, and we provided a table in the attachment which shows this plan and how we feel that it is consistent. But we will be kind of giving you some highlights of all transportation modes as they relate to the plan. I'm also going over some of the land use recommendations. I think that the biggest thing I wanted to emphasize before handing it over to Jeff is just that this plan is a really good opportunity for us to kind of tie transportation and land use. We're always doing that in our small area plans, but the particular site, North Old Town, has a very nice street grid that we wanted to take advantage of. So you'll see some of the recommendations are in response to that, and also that when we look at the power plant site, we're looking to extend that street grid north and provide some additional transit recommendations that help people access the metro stations, which are quite close to this development, in a better way. So I think you're going to hear a lot about transit. You're going to hear a lot about walking and biking. We also have some traffic analysis we want to provide at a high level. I think, you know, one of the biggest aspects of this plan is that there's a lot of opportunity to improve connectivity. So we do have a pretty significant recommendation that recommends taking a Montgomery Street and making it two-way. Currently is one-way, but we feel that sort of going back to the land use and the transportation tie, that we can encourage more development, have a more robust retail corridor on Montgomery Street if we do change the direction, make that bi-directional. And then I will say that there are a number of sort of smaller aspects of our plan that have come up in different contexts that we are looking to address sooner rather than later. So we have had some concerns about loading on some of the streets, which we will be bringing to the Traffic and Parking Board this summer. Those are things that we can address today. And so I just wanted to bring that to the Commission's attention that, you know, we have gotten some feedback. Could we add loading zones in some of these areas? And our staff, our traffic engineers, are actually working, we're going to be working with the businesses and the community to make that happen. So I wanted to kind of upfront mention that. With that, I don't know, Jeff, if you want to give a couple minutes of overview.
Sure. Let me just give a sort of couple quick overview points. And I think the thing that Carrie touched on to me is really important, which is I think our discussion in this plan and in North Potomac Yard, the other plan that we're working on right now, is the integration of land use and transportation pretty carefully. And a lot of these pieces about connectivity relate to economic development. They relate to keeping some of the office uses, attracting retail, et cetera, et cetera. So I know the discussion tonight is sort of focused on transportation, but there's a lot of overlap of various different topics and how we sort of approach this plan. The other thing I would say, and I think this is a focus in both of our plans, and I know we and TNES are pushing very hard in this direction, is to sort of switch the focus on thinking about cars and accommodating cars, but thinking about pedestrians, cyclists, and transit use first, and then also accommodating cars. And I think that's very much a switch of how things used to be, candidly. And I think that's, I think, a good direction of where we're going. We've also had some discussion about, as there's been tonight, about technology and how that's going to inform some of the sort of overall land use. And really the graphic that you see here is, we went through the entire plan area and looked at potential redevelopment sites, and in particular the power plant site, or the former power plant site. I think, as many of you know, the power plant site was decommissioned. It's currently closed, and NRG and PEPCO are in the process of negotiating a very complicated land agreement to subdivide the property and resolve the ownership issues. That's about a 20-acre site. If you look at the overall redevelopment in Old Town North, most of it is the power plant site. About 15% is non-power plant site. I said this in another presentation. From a planning perspective, this has been a fascinating plan to work on. We're talking about sites that are 20,000 square feet and 20 acres. And how do you blend those sort of competing interests and existing buildings and proposed buildings? And it's really about stitching the fabric together. And one other thing I would say for the power plant side, my colleagues in our office has a historic map from 1850 that shows the street grid in the power plant site before the power plant site was constructed and we vacated streets. And so it's really back to the future of how do we reinstall the street grid that was there in the past. So really sort of interesting opportunities. And the power plant site in the plan, and the commission members will see this in the coming months, is a little more conceptual, understanding that it has to go through multiple other processes. And the other thing that I've learned more than I probably care to know is the timing of decommissioning a power plant, the cost of decommissioning a power plant. Because one of the things that I wanted to make sure of as we're going through this process is we're talking about redevelopment, making sure the economics also work to do that. Not just showing a pretty picture on the power plant site, but making sure there's enough economic value to remediate the soil and ultimately redevelop that site. Because what I don't want is in 5 or 10 years to say, why is that site still vacant? So that's a conversation. And I think the next image is, this is a graphic that we put together in our office. We did this hand sketch and then we converted it, really showing how this sort of fits into the character of the neighborhood. The properties that are proposed for redevelopment are shown in orange. The existing buildings are shown in white, and the power plant site is to the right of the screen. And one of the things you see is sort of pulling that street grid into that site and incorporating open space and some other features that I know will be probably a lot of discussion at the Planning Commission. So with that, maybe I'll turn it over to Steve.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the transportation recommendations in particular. And as Carrie mentioned, One of the advantages of this area is that the smarter plan does have a good grid today of connected streets that not only help to facilitate accessibility for vehicles, but also cars, pedestrians, bicycles, transit. And the other advantage is that the smarter plan is within close proximity to the Braddock Metro Rail Station, as well as the future Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station. So all those things, the street grid, existing transit, existing pedestrian bike facilities, as well as the Metro Rail stations, really help to facilitate good movement. And that's why, as I'll show you in a minute, we're not seeing, as we were analyzing the land use changes under the full build-out scenario, we're not really seeing a whole lot of impacts in terms of traffic congestion, except for a couple areas, which I'll point out. And because of this, what we're also seeing is that the mode splits that are in that pie diagram at the bottom, we have a pretty good breakout of how what we're assuming in terms of how people get around. So, you know, about 40% of the people that live in the smart plan, this is commute to work, so during the peak hours, commuting to work, about 40% of the people would be taking metro, another 15% walking, biking, 5% bus, and then the remaining 40% using private vehicles. So I'm going to hit on the key mode recommendations, and these really tie again back to the principle as well as the opportunities that were shown on some of those earlier slides, as well as they tie back to the Transportation Master Plan that really prioritizes bicycle, pedestrian, transit over vehicular improvements. So today there is a good street grid, so the recommendations really look at improving the pedestrian facilities out there today, filling in some of the gaps that are missing. So those would be kind of the baseline improvements. And as I mentioned, the access to the Braddock Metro Station is very important in terms of making sure that today a lot of people use the Braddock Metro Station, but making sure that pedestrian connectivity to the station is really improved so that we can continue to promote walking to the Braddock Metro Rail Station. Some of the key pedestrian improvements, though, that we're recommending are, as Jeff mentioned, the extension of the grid into the power plant site. So we would extend Pitt Street, Fairfax Street, and Royal Streets into the power plant site, and those streets, as they're developed, would have good pedestrian facilities. We're also recommending more kind of on the recreational side of things, improvements to the trail that's along the waterfront. So today there is the Mount Vernon Trail that goes along the waterfront, but as the power plant site gets redeveloped, looking at how we can separate pedestrians and bicycles, and so that we have actual separated facilities to improve safety for those different modes. The other key recommendation is the rail spur that today is used. Well, it's very rarely used today, but it's still in operation. That's owned by Norfolk Southern. Is that as the power plant site gets redeveloped, we would look at converting that rail spur over to a linear park, and trail through there will be improved so that we again have a separated pedestrian and bicycle trail through that, again to improve safety. Green streets is another thing that we're recommending. So there are a couple key locations in here where we're recommending green streets, particularly Royal Street, and that's really looking at how we can enhance the streetscape of the along the street to improve again the pedestrian experience, slow down cars, and it's also a sustainability measure. In terms of bicycle improvements, we're really trying to maintain the recommendations that were in the Transportation Master or the Pedestrian Bicycle Chapter of the Transportation Master Plan that was approved last year. So some of the key recommendations of that plan are the Rail Street Greenway that looks at traffic calming improvements to slow down cars to help both pedestrians and bicycles move better, more effectively, and safer on that street. The Madison Street Corridor is another one that provides good connectivity from the Braddock Metro Station to the waterfront and to the Mount Vernon Trail. So looking at, you know, in the future, we'd be looking at that corridor to see what enhancements could be made, doing a more vigorous public outreach process closer to the implementation of that project to really see what is the right design for that corridor. And then some other ones I mentioned, the improvements on the separated pedestrian and bicycle improvements on the linear trail along the waterfront, as well as the Norfolk Southern Spur. And also some things that we're also recommending that were not in the Pitt Bike Master Plan, but as the power plant gets redeveloped, improving Slater's Lane so that we would have a good bicycle facility along Slater's Lane to connect from the northern end of the power plant site and the Marina Towers area across over to the area west of the GW Parkway. And one other thing is Capital Bike Share Station. So today there are three bike share stations within the plan area, so this plan recommends expanding those, both within Old Town North, but also the power plant site, adding, as that gets redeveloped, adding bike share stations. In terms of transit, today there is a pretty good transit service, both Dash routes as well as WMATA routes, and then a little bit further to the west, the Metroway operates on Route 1. One of the recommendations that were that's in the plan, also that's been in previous plans, including the Dash comprehensive operations analysis, is to implement a circulator that would connect the Braddock Metro Rail Station to the King Street Metro Rail Station. So that's really, it would become this U-shaped connector, providing frequent service, probably with headways every 10 to 15 minutes. Today, the AT-8 operates along there, but that runs every half an hour. So this is really increasing the headways so that you have a good connector that connects those two metro rail stations. That was actually something that initially came out of the, when we did the Transitway Corridors Feasibility Study for Corridor A, that was the recommendation that work group had recommended. And so that would be implemented this planning effort as well. And then another key recommendation for transit is to provide a new transit route that would connect through the power plant site, because today there really isn't anything up in that area. So as that area gets developed, having a new local route that would connect through there, going up to the future Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station, and then continuing south into Old Town. And then in terms of roadways, again, I talked about the street grid. So the key thing in terms of recommendations for roadways is really again to extend that grid into the power plant site. One of the other key things that we want to make sure that we do is, as new roadways are built, is to make sure that they're designed in a way that they're compatible to all users. So we did the, finished our street design guidelines about a year or so ago that actually lay out specific design tools for how streets based on typology can be designed in a manner to respond to or accommodate all users, pedestrians, bicyclists, transit riders. So as we develop new streets, we want to make sure that they're following those guidelines.
Can I ask a quick question on that last slide? Forgive me because this might be defined in the streets typology document, but I noticed that we've got the existing parkway, which is the parkway, UW Parkway, and then we have the proposed parkway. It's the extension of Fairfax being called a parkway, and I'm just wondering what the, they don't feel like they would be designed to be the same, because one is very limited access with no ped and bike
right.
facilities on it at all, and the other one's probably not intended to be like that, so I was just wondering.
I think Fairfax would, the extension of Fairfax would be designed in a much more, be much more tied to the guidelines than GW Parkway is, because it's going to be much more of an active use with the trails along it that would be really encouraging pedestrians and bicyclists to use it.
So Steve, the designation for a parkway on the power plant site was really being driven by the park on one side.
Right.
And
so
I think
it's a different definition than
correct. And I think it will be a much more urban street, smaller lanes, probably parking on one side and park on the other side. That's okay. Sort of what we've discussed.
So as Carrie mentioned, one of the key considerations that we are recommending in this plan is converting Montgomery Street from a one-way, today it's one-way going westbound. It's kind of a part of this couplet system of Montgomery and Madison streets, and converting that to a two-way street. And as we talked about, it's really doing that to do a number of things. It's helping to facilitate, if that's, since we're recommending that as a commercial street, expanding the commercial uses along that street in the future, it's really important that you that two-way operation is used to help get people to those land uses. It also slows down traffic. It just makes it a little bit more pedestrian friendly. So we did analyze that as part of our traffic analysis, and I'll go into some of the results of that in a little bit. One of the things also that Carrie mentioned is loading was an issue that we've heard from some of the community members, so I'll talk about that as well.
You know, I just want to mention, Michelle, we think this is critically important for the success of retail. And one of the bullet points up here, we researched many retail streets in this country, and 80% of them are two-way streets, and giving people the opportunity to go past the store twice, essentially going to and from work, either hopefully walking or biking, but if they're driving, they also have that opportunity, and retail is sort of an important important key, a linchpin in Old Town North to keeping some of the office, adding vibrancy, hopefully giving people options so they don't have to drive outside the plan area. So we really think from a planning and transportation perspective, this is really important for us.
So as we went through the traffic analysis, we modeled a number of different scenarios, including a baseline and then, of course, the 2040 build, which is assuming all the full build-out of the power plant site as well as the infill development. And as we modeled that, as I mentioned earlier, we weren't really seeing a huge amount of impacts. Most of the intersections, there were 30 intersections that we analyzed as part of this. Most of the intersections operated without any significant impacts, with the exception of a couple, mainly up at Washington at Slater's and then Washington at Bashford. So as we were testing the analysis, we then looked at potential mitigation. And so this is just kind of pointing out those areas where we're recommending additional transportation mitigation. And I'll go into detail about some of these in a minute. One of the key things is that we're recommending is an additional east-west street that would connect from the future power plant redevelopment area across GW Parkway to connect to West and East Abington. And that what that really does is it helps to, because today you really only have Slater's Lane that would be the primary access point. So the east-west street combined with the additional extension of the grid south of there really helps to, rather than funneling all the traffic in at one location, we're providing multiple access points. So that helps to break out, reduce the amount of traffic that's just coming into Slater's Lane. And we have heard a number of concerns from the community about the issues that are happening in Slater's Lane today with traffic congestion. So we think that will really help. And then at Washington at Montgomery Street, I'll show you a graphic about what we're planning to do in terms of the improvements there. And then at Bashford and Washington, some additional improvements are really just restriping. We're not looking at widening the street at all. At Washington and Montgomery, so what the configuration will look at like here is, again, Montgomery becomes two-way, and we would provide a, in both the eastbound and the westbound directions, a dedicated left turn lane so that trips that want to get onto Washington, they have their own space, and then the through traffic that wants to continue on Montgomery has their own lane. Today, there's a northbound left turn that goes to Powhatan Street, so we would remove that left turn lane, and that the northbound left turn would actually go to Montgomery Street rather than Powhatan. So Powhatan would be redesigned. We would tighten that radius and make that a right in, right out. We've actually talked to the fire department, and they're fine with that that operation. There is a fire station further up on Powhatan Street, so they were okay with that. And then on Washington Street, so in addition to the northbound left turn to Montgomery, there would also be a southbound left turn to Montgomery. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the issues that we've been hearing from the community is loading. So to have that, to have that left turn lane, what we'd have to do is remove some of the parking that's located on both the east leg and west leg of Montgomery Street so that we have enough space to put in that left turn. We don't think we would have to widen Montgomery Street to allow for that left turn. And then further east where the Hot Dogs restaurant and the TJ Stones is, that's where we've been hearing a lot of concerns about loading issues today. And so what we've told the community is actually we can actually work with them today and work through the Traffic and Parking Board to have some loading zones put in there to help alleviate the situation. And then as development occurs on Montgomery Street further east, as this becomes more of a commercial corridor, we would require through the planning, through the plan, that those future developments accommodate loading through a loading plan or on-street loading for those spaces so that we try to mitigate or address that concern. I mentioned Slater's Lane. We've also heard a lot of concerns from the community about, again, the congestion that we're seeing here today. So one of the, so on the left you can see how it kind of operates today. You've got the southbound ramp off the GW Parkway. And for about half of that, half to two-thirds of that, it's only one lane coming off the GW Parkway, and then it kind of divides into two lanes. So there's enough width there that we can actually restripe that and have two lanes going all the way up to the parkway. That will help reduce some of the queuing that we're seeing through the 2040 build-out scenario. That will help reduce the queuing that would then comes onto the parkway, so you have more space on the ramp itself to accommodate traffic. And then in the northbound on East Abington, there's also issues during the AM peak where traffic merging onto the GW Parkway, that there's a lot of congestion. So what we're recommending there, today there's only one lane as it merges onto the parkway.
So we would, that striped out area that's exists there today, we would open that up to traffic, and the signal that's located there, we'd have to operate that all day. So because if you open that up to two merging lanes, the receiving lanes of the GW need to be able to accommodate those merge lanes. So we'd have to signalize that all day. But the modeling that we did shows that that wouldn't be an issue, so that could be accommodated during the full all day.
So related to that, I understand how the extra lane would be facilitated onto the parkway. The extra lane that we're putting as people exit the parkway and then queue up at Slater's Lane, right now it's a right turn to get onto Slater's Lane in that direction, often to connect over to Route 1, I think.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a perhaps less utilized potential for a right turn or a straight at that location. So I'm just wondering, I mean, are you going to have two? I can't quite tell.
We're showing a through right and then a left turn lane, a dedicated left turn lane, and then a through right.
And so is the queuing, I guess I'm just wondering, because you don't have capacity to put two right turns on Slater's Lane there, is the queuing really distributed between both of those two desires, or is it mostly people turning right on the Slater's Lane?
I'm not sure exactly what the the bulk of the queuing, if it's related to the right turn versus, we could look at that
and
find out a little bit more, but based on the analysis, it was showing that with this improvement, as well as the east-west street that I talked about, and the improvements on Bashford, that it really this becomes support. This goes from a level service F to I believe a D. So.
And I think another aspect of it is the through movement as you're going southbound on the avenue. That when you cross Slater's, when that new road is, and it's not just a road, but it's also we're looking at a pedestrian and bicycle improvement there too, because there'll be a trail that crosses, and so that'll be part of it. But with that new through movement across GW Parkway, we're going to look at how we looked at some designs that allow us to essentially get traffic cross Slater's and then going in the direction that typically is not the right, it is the right turn, but they're going to have to. Helpful if you can see a graphic, but essentially they're able to take the right turn later. Like they don't take it at Slater's, they take it at the next block.
Right.
So it provides sort of more connectivity and less backup at that intersection.
This is the east-west road that we talked about. So again, taking the grid that was recommended within the power plant site and then extending that across GW Parkway. We have started conversations with the National Park Service, and they are, at this point, they're open to continuing to work with us on this. They haven't said no to this, which is a good sign, so I think moving forward we would continue to involve them in the process and determine what other, if there's any other additional environmental review that needs to be done.
And could you access the parkway from that new east-west road?
We haven't really detailed it out yet, but I think what it would be that you would probably stay on Abington to get onto the parkway instead of being able to turn right onto Washington right there, but I think we would have to look at that as part of the analysis.
Are you considering the pathways for cycling and the last slide and here? Cause given what Carrie was saying, like that the bike path,
so
slide right before actually might be easier to see it.
Yeah, there's a trail today that comes up here. So one of the recommendations is to improve this. You have both separate bike trail through the rail spur,
mm-hmm.
and then we've got another project on the east side of Abington, on East Abington. Today, this is like a sidewalk. So if you're coming off this trail, this is like a narrow sidewalk, and it's kind of a safety issue.
Right.
Because it's one direction, so bikes that are coming south off the trail, sometimes they drive and they
mm-hmm.
get into the travel lane and they're going the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a project that's actually looking at widening that. So that's definitely part of the plan, is continuing that.
And Slater's Lane's a big cycle route too. It's like you've got a bike route on it.
Yeah, so we
bike lane
so that's
on
more,
it. So and then they turn left to go onto the bike path. So just picturing all this merging of.
Yeah, and as we
I
get further,
I can see saying corridors where cyclists would want to use still. So
yeah,
we're
fairly conceptual at this point, but as those projects move
mm-hmm.
forward into design, we would definitely want to make sure that we're minimizing any impacts to safety and making sure that they're all seamless in terms of.
Hey, but I would also add, with our conversation with the National Park Service, I think their willingness for us to look at this was that very issue when the rail corridor becomes a linear park with the bike trail and,
mm-hmm.
and the sidewalk. There's going to be a huge desire path to get to the west. And whether we accommodate that or not, people are going to want to cross there, and let's make it safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit of that is the rail corridor continues all the way up to essentially the Route 1 bridge,
mm-hmm.
and if that linear park and trail system connect essentially all the way up, then that could be a better connection to get to the metro, Potomac Yard Metro, and so there's a lot of opportunities in there, and I think as Steve pointed out, it's not to sort of understate that.
Mm-hmm.
The National Park Service said, we're okay with you looking at this, it's going to be a process, just build in enough time, so we were very excited about that.
Okay, and so signalized.
And one other thing to note, that they historically have told us no of additional signal, even pedestrian signals on Parkway when we've talked to them about it. But one advantage, there's a railroad crossing today. So there's a signal there today, and there's a crossing today. So I think the bike head and the fact that there's an existing crossing, for all those reasons, I think they were willing to say, we'll work with you.
That was very encouraging.
So this is kind of going back again to the results of the traffic operations analysis. And when we analyzed the traffic, we looked at existing conditions. We did a 2040 baseline, which was basically assuming only planned and approved land uses, as well as any transportation improvements that were already in our plan or funded, such as the Potomac Yard Metro Rail Station was added into the model for this scenario. And then we did the 2040 build scenario that adds in all the additional land use infill development as well as the power plant site. And then we did a final scenario that added in these other mitigation projects that I just talked about, the additional east-west street, the improvements at Slater's and Washington. And so we can see here is the intersection delay. We just have a few streets here, the ones that we were seeing most of the issues at, is significantly improved under that mitigation scenario. It's the last column shows a significant improvement in terms of the delay at those intersections. And that, as you can see, it's actually on par with existing conditions. So from the 2040 build where it was actually going, you know, the delay was increasing significantly, it's brought significantly back down once you put those mitigation improvements in. So for both the AM and the PM, we're seeing that. And then this is just travel time. So we looked at both the northbound and the southbound travel time. And the distance was between Queen Street and Slater's Lane. So again, with the mitigation that we added in that last column, you're seeing that the travel time in the AM goes down as compared to both the existing baseline and the 2040 build. And then on the southbound, it's relatively, it increases a little bit, but it's still, it's pretty much the same. And then this just shows all 30 intersections that we analyzed under the 2040 build with the mitigation. As you can see, all the intersections that we tested were either at level service D or above, so no E's or F's on any of the intersections. And that's again with all the mitigation that we included in the analysis. Parking is another key thing. Commissioner Jones was talking about parking earlier today, and some of those things that we that you mentioned, we'll be looking at parking. We actually did a separate parking study as part of this. We did a utilization study to see what the parking issues were today. What we're seeing today, and I think I mentioned this to you 6 months ago when I gave the update, we're not seeing a whole lot of issues in terms of parking over utilization, except for in that area near like the Montgomery Center along St. East of that area. So as we continue to build out this area in the future, we would be looking at doing a couple things. One is some of those spaces today, there's not really, especially in that commercial area, there's not a lot of things that restrict parking there. So we would look at putting up potentially some additional parking restrictions that would help improve the turnover of those spaces. If that doesn't help improve the parking situation in that area, the next step might be to put in parking meters.
When you refer to retail corridor, are you referring to Montgomery?
Yeah, Montgomery and St. East, that general area.
There's not that much there right now.
No, but so the plan, that's what they're recommending, is actually making St. East more of a commercial corridor.
St. East as well?
St. East and mainly Montgomery being a kind of an east-west, but St. East too, I believe, was also being recommended for additional commercial. So.
And what kind of interest, commercial interest would it be?
You want to go back to Montgomery Street?
I'm just curious. I used to live there.
Yeah.
So in the condo at Watergate.
So one of the one of the things you see in the diagram on the right is what's shown in red is what we're calling required retail, and one of the lessons learned in retail is to concentrate it and connect it. And one of the things that's going to be happening in the short term, Eden State, former ABC giant site, is redeveloping. So there's about 300,000 square feet of retail out there today. The plan's proposing roughly 100,000-150,000 additional. So it's still relatively modest. We are seeing some interest of what's going into Eden's. Of course, you have Trader Joe's and some other uses out there, Montgomery Center. So this is really just sort of stitching some of those pieces together that are already out there. And yeah, in terms of potential tenants, there are potential tenants and some very interesting ones looking at going into Eden site.
And does the community support all this? Is there community support?
So we've had a over a year-long process with quite a large advisory group led by one of our planning commission members. I don't want to say it's unanimous. I think there's general support for the plan, and I think as Steve pointed out, we've been having some discussions on individual pieces of loading and traffic and implementation, and so we're still working through that, but the group had agreed to endorse the plan.
So I used to live at Watergate about in San Francisco, which is smack in the middle of it all.
Yes, it is.
So it's just interesting to...
And then continuing on the parking and some of the other things that we've been looking at, especially as sites get redeveloped, such as the power plant site, making sure that site has, you know, that we're looking at some policies related to things like shared parking. That'll be very important. But also understanding in the future, parking may be, especially with autonomous vehicles, you know, the way we look at parking, I think we're going to have to start looking at how we design and build those structures with the forethought of, you know, thinking about 30 years from now, there'll probably be less demand for parking in some of those locations. So how can we design buildings so that, or parking structures so that they can be converted to some other use?
And arguably your tolerance for walking will be a lot further if you know you can hop in a small pod that just goes on private roads, you know, and never exceeds 20 miles per hour. I mean, that exists today, so,
yeah.
You know.
Or a good way to get to Braddock, because I used to try and walk to Braddock from Watergate of Alexandria, and it was scary, it was inconvenient. You know, if there was a good way to get there,
like you might not
feel safe.
I think the idea with the plan, though, is that it's going to be much nicer. I mean, I walk every day,
right.
Every day today, in the dark, in the daylight, anytime, because that's my. I do like the inverse. I walk to the park from Braddock to walk my dog. But for the folks, for this whole transition period of time when there isn't eyes on the street, when there aren't those uses around that are gonna liven up that section. So Montgomery especially is gonna become more lively than it is today. And I think so we wanna get people to walk more rather than give them like other pods to isolate themselves in.
But so say like the Mosaic District is just a little bit too far from Dunloring to walk, and you know, they're looking at different shuttle options and all that.
Yeah.
But you know, these vehicles, at least the Easy Mile vehicles, are 6 feet wide, so you can potentially like have a shared use bicycle multi-use trail and not even think about a roadway, you know, that this is exclusively using along with bicycles and pedestrians and all that. So you know, just all kinds of different possibilities just to connect like the heart of Mosaic District with Dunloring. So, and you know, you might walk it during the nice weather, but you know, if it's rain, it's like you're guaranteed ride home, at least to the metro station. So
And then kind of going back to the discussion earlier that we were having about the autonomous vehicles, emerging technologies, we want to make sure that as we move forward that we're looking at those things. Right now we're still very kind of on the early edge of that, so there hasn't been enough implementation and analysis to really know what's going to happen. But we're probably looking out 20 to 30 years before most vehicles are actually autonomous. So as future transportation studies are done, we want to make sure that we're incorporating those into the modeling. And as modeling methodologies change to account for those types of things, as well as you know, level of service, those various things, we want to make sure that we're looking at that in the future as we're continuing to do transportation studies. Not only autonomous vehicles, but other things like electric charging stations, you know, building that into it, car share, bike share, all these kind of emerging technologies. We want to make sure that we're continuing to look at those in the future. And again, they have an impact of both traffic impacts, as well as the built environment, as well as the way our roads are going to be designed in the future. So we want to make sure that we're flexible enough so that we can kind of make these changes as we need to. So with that, again, Carrie mentioned what your charge is, and they have in your packet, there should have been a table that basically ties the plan back to the transportation master plan. And the transportation master plan, there's a number of goals that are separated by mode. And so that table shows kind of the status quo if we did implement this plan, and then if we do implement this plan, how that ties back to the master plan and making sure that we're consistent. Because that's the main thing, is we want to you know, ask the commission to ensure that this plan is consistent with the transportation master plan. So with that, we're happy to answer any additional questions. I do want to mention the next steps. Actually, this date for the Planning Commission, I've just been informed that that is actually now June 14th that we'll be going to the Planning Commission, and then June 24th for Council.
Okay. All right, discussion?
So you had mentioned that 40% of people use Metro. Is that right now?
No, that's not now. That's the, so when we do the mode split calculations, there's a specific methodology that we look at land uses and their proximity to things like metro stations, transit, and so we build all that in. Mm-hmm. And so based on the future land use that's being projected and traffic, trip generation, then we tie that back to that pie chart that was showing what we're anticipating. But that actually is not too far off today. I can't remember what the exact mode split is today, but it's getting up there. It's pretty close to what that that future mode split was. So.
And then is Royal Street, is that still the alternative connector through Old Town? Bike trail, is that still on the table?
So it's not really a bike trail, it's called a green street. And so what we're looking at are traffic calming improvements along that street. We have not we've kind of looked at some conceptual designs for that, but it hasn't really moved into the public outreach process. So we'll be doing additional outreach over the next year to identify what are the design tools that could be used along that. But mainly those tools would be looking at things like curb extensions, streetscaping, other traffic calming improvements that will slow down cars and make the street more welcoming for both bicyclists and pedestrians.
And then just have it as a shared?
Right, there would not be specific, there wouldn't be bike lanes, they would be shared.
I have a quick question. So I know in an original version of this plan, we had talked about making both Montgomery and Madison two ways. Was there a particular engineering challenge to making Madison? I just don't understand. If we're going to go in this direction, why not?
That's a great question, and has come up before, because we did originally look at both. I would say there are two things that sort of played into the decision to keep it, to keep Madison one way. One thing is that the pedestrian bicycle master plan chapters recommend that we have that as an enhanced corridor for cyclists. If we convert it to two-way, it's challenging for us to do that because it reduces the sort of buildable area for a bike lane or whatever the bike facility could be. So that was one consideration. The other consideration is that, and Jeff might be able to speak a little bit to this, but our focused retail street was more on the Montgomery side versus Madison. The other thing about Madison is that we did, you know, through the public outreach process, did get a lot of pushback in terms of converting that street. And I think, you know, that's sort of an aside, but I mean, from a technical consideration, from our technical side of things, it was more to do with the bike facility. But yeah, when we had that discussion, we just got a lot of concern as well about the conversion. I don't know if you want to add anything in terms of the retail, Jeff, but we really wanted to make sure that the retail street was two-way. That was kind of functional, it's a more of a functional and land use transportation.
And the analysis didn't show that there were any adverse impacts with keeping Madison as one way and Montgomery.
I just think it was weird. Montgomery was one way. I always thought that was stupid. Madison makes sense, sort of, but okay, thanks.
Any other discussion?
Yeah. And is all of this dependent on developers coming in with their proposals and then as a result of the development, you know, putting piecemeal funding into
Some of it,
changing.
Yeah, and maybe
roads.
Jeff can expand on this, but I mean, we have projects right now that are in our plans and in our budget to do some of these projects, such as the one on East Abington that I mentioned earlier. But then, yes, definitely, as for example, as a power plant site gets redeveloped, we would require them to put in the trail, the separate trail along the waterfront, as well as contributions toward the rail spur and putting in the separate pedal bike displays to the rail spur. Some of the other projects, like the Royal Street Greenway, that's in our Complete Streets program, so we implement that through that program. Same with Madison Street, that's in our budget right now. So some of these would be already funded, and others would be expected through implementation and development.
And we don't have funding for the conversion of the street to two-way. I mean, on the face of it, sounds like it would be a quick thing. We would need to do some traffic signal modifications, which could add up. So when developments come in that area, we will likely ask for contributions for that.
Any other discussion? Okay, I'll open the public hearing. Public hearing is open for the plan. Is there any input? Anybody?
I don't know.
Sign
that
up?
We do not have any speakers signed up for the public hearing.
I didn't think so. Okay, the public hearing is closed. We had to say that we had the public hearing, so that's done. Okay, since there's no more discussion, I'll entertain a motion to endorse.
May I just ask one more question?
Certainly.
I know. Back in the day when I lived there, parking was easy, and that was in the 2000s, and now it's a lot tighter, and as there is more development, where are people going to be parking? And I didn't hear a whole lot of
I think it ties back.
I understand the focus is not car parking now, it's more pedestrian, bike, shared transit. But there still is a lot of residential there, and I'm sure there'll be more residential as there's more development, because there's still a lot of open space.
And so the standards that we adopted a couple years ago for the residential parking ordinance, as new developments come in, they're required to follow the look at the parking ratios that are in that ordinance. And then, as Melissa mentioned, we're doing the commercial parking study right now that will ultimately end up with some recommendations that could be then tied back to an ordinance update for commercial parking. So whatever development happens in the future would be required to follow those requirements in that ordinance. But as I mentioned also when I was talking about parking, that we we'd be looking at things like shared parking. So today there might be locations where you have two different properties and you have a parking lot or a garage that's sitting empty for half a day. That's not used by anyone else. So are there opportunities that, you could have, one land use, those two land uses sharing the parking that may have demands at different times of the day. So that's one way that we could look at maximizing the efficiency of those spaces. And then as I mentioned, as we move out further, I think with autonomous vehicles and changes in technology, we're probably gonna see less demand for parking in the future than we're seeing today, because vehicles will probably, the value of that land is going to be so high that parking is not really, it doesn't make sense for those that used to be using our streets for parking. Probably look at things more like drop-off and pickup areas on blocks, and then parking might be accommodated in satellite facilities. So as we design these parking facilities, we need to make sure that they're designed in a manner that they could be converted to some other use in the future, and then that parking might be located somewhere else off-site.
Sounds good, but retail is not going to thrive unless people can get to retail, and there's only so much capacity of people living in that area that are going to go to retail. We as a family love Odie Dog, and we also love Hat's Pasta, and so we drive down to those establishments, and parking is getting harder and harder every time we visit. And so to support retail on a two-way street, people need to have access, and a lot of people are going to need to park if they're driving.
So we would be looking at
these kinds of family. And if you're in my arena, which is dual working family with kids with multiple activities, cars are still the fastest way to get where you need to go. And so that's what we use.
I think these are good questions, and I think some of this actually did come up in part of the advisory group discussions.
Yeah.
And one thing that we, so we did do a parking study with this plan. I don't think we went into great detail, but we used Bluetooth technology as well, which we haven't done before with parking, which was helpful for us to kind of see also where people are coming when they're parking there. And one thing we found with the on-street parking is, as you're describing, if you're trying to park on the street, you're seeing about a 70% occupancy average on those blocks, which is 85% is when we get to the point where we're kind of, you know, that's pretty high occupancy. 70% is still, I would say, in the higher range.
Yeah.
And so part of what we noted when we were out there is, like, we have a lot of blocks that are not restricted in any way. So we have folks that are parking on those blocks to perhaps avoid paying for a garage space. So they could be living in a building that has a garage, but parking on the street to essentially not have to pay.
And they're parking, they're going to DCA.
Yes,
which
or
that's what most
yes,
of it.
They're
that's
unrestricted.
A lot of
it's actually quite hard to find an unrestricted block in Old Town, but there are several of them in this area. People know about them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
employees know about
street.
Them. They park there and walk blocks.
So separate efforts are going to fix
so separate
that.
So to your point, yeah, we have to change the restrictions on those streets to change the behavior of how the parking and make it more available for people. We also have to likely install meters in the retail corridor, which is a recommendation to help also increase turnover.
Mm-hmm.
The garages, on the other hand, that are in that area have very low occupancy, like 47% on average. Some survey periods, they're ranging from 12 to 17% occupancy.
And we would have no problem, but let me just, as a corollary to that, and this is the whole signage, and whenever we cut back on, you know, funding for signage, it's really hard to find parking sometimes. I mean, we need signs directing people into parking garages, and we need information there because it's sometimes really hard to find.
And that was one thing. I didn't really go into that, but wayfinding was one of our recommendations.
It's really, you know, it drives me nuts when I see that being cut back because, I mean, the way you need people for these establishments to be successful, and you know, I need to get in and out easy because my schedule is ridiculously tight.
So wayfinding, and the other thing I was going to mention is technologies to, like, for example, it might be that this parking technology you have at the entrance to the parking garage shows you how many spaces are actually available.
Totally convenient.
So, and then the other thing is going to be pricing and how we work with private development so that the pricing of garages is competitive or advantageous so that people aren't necessarily trying to find a space that's circling around the block trying to find an on-street space. But they'll be more likely to actually use the garages, which, as Carrie mentioned, they're fairly underutilized today.
If you want to ration a scarce resource, it has to be done with, you know, some kind of financial economics and stuff like that. So, you know, some jurisdictions are looking at, like, dynamic pricing for parking. You know, San Francisco's looking at that. But I've heard, like, you know, for every zip car, that's 20, you know, other cars that don't need to exist because of the shared use and stuff like that. So, you know, that might not work in your situation, but that helps you have a parking space if, you know, 20 other people now have shifted to a zip car and, you know, a household that used to have three cars can now go down to two or one. So
one thing that the advisory committee was looking at is for buildings, apartment buildings and condos is restricting if they provide parking and the people don't take it because they don't want to buy it, then they would be restricted parking on there. I don't know where that's going.
That actually is going to the city council. That policy is going to the city council on May
13th. Yeah, because you can see that happening in certain areas.
We've already gotten past May 13th. Thank you.
Where people just don't want to buy that space inside, but they'll park outside for free.
And we have found that to be the case, particularly with the Harris Teeter location. We have folks that are choosing to park on the street because it's $35 for a year to get a sticker.
Yep.
So why, if you and you don't want to pay $100 a month to park in the garage. So what it's doing is it kind of reduces the pool of parking for people that are going to businesses or people that, it's a delicate issue, it's a tricky issue, but we have, I think, come up with a policy that sort of addresses it in the best way possible. So we'll see how that goes when we go June 13th to the city council.
Yeah, it was really controversial in Lynn Haven when the Jackson Crossing affordable apartments were built on the north side of Reed and Route 1, because as part of the developer's agreement, for their funding, residents are charged, I think it's $25 a month or something like that. But, you know, it's already an affordable unit, so very cost-sensitive population probably for most of the residents. So, and then all the street parking's free. So, you know, residents of Lynnhaven are, you know, perennially always complaining about the parking situation at, yep. at our Civic Association meetings. And so that's sort of become the lightning rod of, you know, blame. And I say, I mean, I find it's not too hard to find street parking, but, you know, people want that spot right in front of their house. And if they had it 20 years ago and they've lived there for 40 years, they feel like that's theirs, you know, so.
That's the common belief around here.
As a citizen, I can empathize, you know, I'm a huge advocate of walking, biking, you know, and public transportation, but, you know, at different points in your life, different realities come to the forefront, and there's different priorities, and, you know, we can't squeeze cars out altogether. And for a large community of people, you know, you use cars because that's the best way to get around in a time constrained environment. So
Lynnhaven's also a unique case because, you know, you want to have parking available, because if you don't, a lot of the residents have the option of parking behind their house or converting their, you know, part of their backyard into a gravel space, and then that's not good for, you know, stormwater and a whole lot of other ecological reasons. So, you know, you want to have that street parking available so that people aren't converting their backyards into parking spaces. So.
Mr. Chairman, would you look for a motion? Sorry, I think it sounds a little like we're beating a dead horse.
Can I say one thing that's unrelated to parking? I've just been waiting for the parking thing to slow down. I guess I just wanted to say that overall, I think this plan is really strong. And I don't think it's doing anything earth-shattering with transportation. So I know that we're here to endorse it and say that it's consistent with the master plan. And I looked through the crosswalk that you all made, which is great. And what I think it does, rather than create earth-shattering new transportation ideas or options, is that it is creating a land use framework that's going to support the options that the city's already planning in a lot of ways through these other plan documents. So it's, whether it's in the master plan or it's in other other efforts, like this outlines a lot of different things that would still happen in the status quo if this plan for some reason were not adopted, efforts that are already underway, and yet it's really important that small area plans like this can be updated to reflect where the priorities of the community are and how it relates to the other things going on around the new metro station that's going to go in Potomac Yard, connections to Braddock Road. And it's important that this plan be able to help Old Town North provide the human support, the feet on the street that are going to make it easier for people to not drive. Because the people are going to provide the people who go to the retail, who support retail, so that people, whether from near or far, can go to more retail, and it's going to make the roads safer because having pedestrians and bikes on the streets are going to make the cars slow down just by their nature. So it's really, it's a very symbiotic thing that's going on here, which is not so much about, you know, that we have to endorse this to tell everyone that this is a brand new transportation idea. And I think that, even though that is not there, this plan is very strong in the ways that it is carrying out essentially established priorities that we're just trying to make happen throughout the community.
Incremental progress.
Yes, and I think that deserves being commended for its own merits.
So. Yeah, I'd like to commend the city to have the insight to have the design laid out as a grid system to continue the grid system that's in Old Town. I think that mm-hmm. and that lends itself to, you know, multimodal transportation, yep. You know, throughout the area. So that's one of the key things there. Without that, I think we would you know, had difficulty coming up with a transportation plan that that would match the one we, you know, we have today. So, with that, any other discussions?
Mr. Chairman, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Okay. I move that the Transportation Commission endorses the Old Town North Small Area Plan as amendment, as it is consistent with the transportation element of the city's master plan as proposed by staff.
I'll second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you.
So I guess work on a letter or memo to come from the Transportation Commission that would go to the Planning Commission and Council. So I guess Chris will work with you on that. So.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Other
business?
On the west side of Raleigh. So you go north of Delray.
The question I have is any change in the budget status from.
No, the budget was adopted in May 3rd.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble with dates tonight, but yeah, it was adopted at and there were no add delete items related to transportation, mainly because we had sort of talked about the WMATA changes really early on in the process and that carried through. So.
Okay. And the other thing is, their next meeting will be in the sister cities.
That's correct. There will be construction going on in this room, so we will be in a different location
for probably 3 months. Okay, anybody else have any other business? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Adjourn. Thank you for your time and attention.
Melissa, they did not schedule our second Planning Commission meeting next month at the same time as this meeting, did they?
No, because this is a Wednesday.
I guess they didn't want to talk on.
I thought they switched it to Wednesday. I thought
okay.
They were asking about Wednesday.
You look very happy.
And I thought they were asking about the second Wednesday, and I said okay.
Yes. So our Transportation Commission meeting is the third Wednesday, the 21st. So that's this meeting is the third Wednesday, the 21st. And our Planning Commission new date is
the pre-meeting.
Yep. So it's, I think, because of when the month starts. The weeks are a little different. So we're going to have like a Planning Commission meeting 1 week, another one another week, and then the third week is this meeting.
It must start on Thursday.
Like
the
yes.
Big debate was, you know, the month starts on Thursday.
The month starts on Thursday.
All right.
So they're going to definitely.
So they don't overlap. They could just.
They already did put it in. This wasn't. There's now a cut through right here. But they were, you know, part of it was like, you know, like they're going to have a whole retail boulevard like here, like you would have in Charlottesville. And the question was, you know, would you be able to walk directly from that retail corridor to Vernon? And they did like a site tour and all that. People were like 50-50. Yeah, because everybody in the neighborhood, like these are all like single family houses and all that. So they didn't want like people walking through like in mass.
No,
Do you want to shut this off? I don't know who this is. Is this yours? Okay. Someone is randomly listening to me.